Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Very happy to have you along with us today. As we start off by talking about the search engine Google and the strategies behind its success. Bernard Girard is a management consultant, radio host, journalist, and author of numerous books on management. He lives in France. He's analyzed Google's innovations since 2000 and reveals the secrets in his book, The Google Way, How One Company is Revolutionizing Management as We Know It. It's published by No Starch Press. You can get more information about No Starch at nostarch.com, or you can call an 800 number to find out more information or to order the book at 800-420-7240. And Bernard Girard, pleasure to have you with us on the telephone today.
Well, I am happy to be with you too, Jim.
Thank you so much. It's just a little more than 10 years ago that the search engine Google began to become a household name, and the verb Google is certainly part of the lexicon here, and I assume it's the same there in France.
It is in France. Actually, now I'm in London, in England, but it's the same all over Europe, you know. It's really, I see that in Europe we love Google more than you do in the States.
Mm-hmm.
If it's possible.
Yes, if that's possible. I know that Google owns a huge share of the market here in terms of browsers. Is it the same way there in Europe?
Yes, I would say that their share is larger in Europe than it is in the States.
Hmm.
In France, it's about 90%.
Wow.
It's really, you know, they really made a big success. And I remember when they started that was in 1998, you're right, more than 10 years. The first time I heard about Google, I started using it. And that first day, and I was not the only one, and most everyone had the same experience, I understood it would be the search engine. You know, before we had a search engine, when we made a search, we went from its site to Yahoo, from Yahoo to Hotbot, and then when we found Google, we understood it. We didn't have to go from one search engine to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons of this.
Well, Google operates within that internet economy of distributed intelligence, building on each of the engines that you mentioned. In Silicon Valley, California, the one-time Stanford students, Larry Page, and is it Sergey Brin?
Yes.
Sergey is how it's pronounced? And they're
Sergey Brin and Larry Page are the two founders of the company.
The
yes.
Co-founders. What accounts for the success that they have been able to achieve?
Well, of course, there is the engine, you know, the algorithm they use, which is really very, very good. But I believe that's only one part of the story. The other part of the story, and this is what I tried to explain in the book, is that really they reinvented management, a bit like, you know, Henry Ford in the beginning of the 20th century, or mm-hmm. People from Toyota did later on. You know, they really reinvented the way we should manage a company. They invented the way we should manage a company in this net economy, and that is probably what made them so successful.
Eric Schmidt joined the company in 2001. He came from yes. Novell Incorporated. And how important was his hire to Google's eventual success?
Well, he is much older than the two, Brin and Page, and he had a management experience which they didn't have. And he could bring the focus on management, which probably, you know, they didn't have, and it could give them some lessons on how to fight anarchy, which Google looked like the beginning.
We're talking with Bernard Girard, management consultant, radio host, journalist, and the author of The Google Way, How One Company is Revolutionizing Management as We Know It. It's published by No Starch Press. If you'd like to join the conversation, all you have to do is give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or, of course, our email address is talk@wpr.org. When it came to financing Google, how did the founders maintain their independence from investors?
Well, they were very keen on being independent, and of course they were very lucky to be in the Silicon Valley. I believe they couldn't have done what they did anywhere else. You know, for several years they lived on VC capital, on venture capital, and they didn't earn a penny for quite a long time. And that's just because they found people who believed the engine would be what it became.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, when they had to earn a living, because venture capitalists, of course, are not silent philanthropists. They want to get their money back. They started to sell advertisement, which they didn't want to do at the beginning. The first paper they wrote, that's very funny when you know that now this company is so powerful in the ad business. The first paper they wrote, they said they didn't like advertisement. They want to sell advertisement, and they had to find a way to sell ads that wouldn't disturb the users. The user we are, you know. Mm-hmm. Remember, that's not so long ago, and it looks so long. So remember, 10 years ago when we were on, I don't know, Excite or Hotbots, always you had this app that went in front of us, and we wanted to find the information, and we had ads that prevented us from getting the information. And they found a way to make the ads almost invisible. A lot of people don't even know that Google sell ads, so these ads are invisible. That's the first thing. Then they're useful. When you look at, you do a search, you can click on the ad, and it's as useful as the answer from the search.
Mm-hmm.
You get me still? Yes.
Yes.
And, so they had to invent this, and that is something very important. And there is the algorithm, which is very important, but the way they could earn their living with this advertising business is really something beautiful.
Cost per click strategy, describe that.
Well, when you buy an ad at Google, you don't pay, like when you buy an ad on your radio, if there are ads on your radio or on, you know, in your newspaper,
mm-hmm.
you buy a space, you buy a print. There, you pay only if someone clicks on your ad, which means that for the advertiser, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Doesn't pay if nobody clicks on his ad, you know. That's very good. And that makes, of course, for the advertisers, it's beautiful. For Google, it's very good because it's very cheap for the advertisers to go to Google. So all advertisers go to Google. And now we live in, through a very, very deep crisis. Advertisers, newspapers suffer a lot, as you know, around the world, and Google doesn't suffer because of that.
We're talking with Bernard Girard, who is the author of The Google Way, How One Company is Revolutionizing Management as We Know It. It's published by No Starch Press, which is available at nostarch.com or at 800-420-7240. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you have questions or comments about search engines, about Google, and about the Google story, then join us at 1-800-642-1234, or our email address is talk@wpr.org. Valued at nearly $100 billion, Google has become one of the world's most powerful brands. And the question, I guess, that people who are management consultants wrestle with is whether or not they're going to be able to continue to do that. Google does have a lot of problems that it has to face in the next years if it's to continue its robust growth, does it not?
Well, it will, of course, have a lot of problems. Like, first, problems of a very, very fast-growing company. You know, the 10 years ago, there were only two, and now there are more than 20,000. So, you know, these kind of problems, they have to solve, and this is very difficult. Then they have all problems to solve with the fact that they give us access to information that's protected by the law, and this is going this could be a problem, you know, with the music. If they want to go in the music, they have to find a way to pay the musicians. If they go to the movies, and they will have these problems too, you know, all these protected things. That's another problem. And then there is a third problem, which maybe in the U.S. you don't see, but we see when outside the U.S. they collect a lot of information on their users. As long as it's information on you and me, on what we search, it doesn't matter very much. But if they collect information on what the French, British, German army do, you know, information on the searches they do, that could be a problem. They say they won't give information to anyone, mm-hmm. but maybe the American government might ask, you know, these questions, and they will have to give to give the answer to say, I don't know, the French army or the German nuclear institution ask certain such questions. And this, they'll have to find a way to protect themselves against the administration.
Mm-hmm.
If you see what I mean, but this is something that's quite important. They have to find ways to protect our privacy.
Google, you mentioned, has around 20,000 full-time employees now. Does it take at least a master's degree or perhaps a doctor's degree to even get a job interview with the company?
Well, that's one of the main things. They are very, very talented people. And this is one of the things that's, you know, all companies say try to hire bright people. I never met a company or a boss who told me I only hire dumb people. Yeah? Usually you try to hire intelligent people, but they really do it. They really spend a lot of time looking for the best, and they something very interesting in the way they manage the HR, the human relations. When you are at Google, you know they choose you, so you're good, but the people you work with are also very good, and as you want these people to accept you, you have to also be good, be very good, work a lot, and prove your intelligence, you know. And that is something they motivate the people with the desire to have a good reputation. And this is very interesting and very, very new. Most companies, you know, just try to motivate people with money.
Right.
Okay.
Right,
no,
or titles.
Well, they don't give money. Well, they did now give a lot of money. But at the beginning, they didn't give much money to their engineers. They just, you know, reputation was the main thing. And that's very original.
I understand that it takes several job interviews before someone would ever be hired.
Yes, several job interviews in several months.
And
it's
is
a very long process, yes.
Various people that you might be working with who do these interviews? I mean,
yes, that's it. That is the people you're going to work with do the interviews. And what is very interesting is that they ask you technical questions. And usually when you ask someone, you just look at his diplomas, you know, and you say, well, he went to such a school, he has a PhD, so he must be very good in, let's say, physics or chemistry or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And at Google, you know, they hire people with PhDs, with very good diplomas, but they don't think the diploma is a proof that you are very good on the technical side. They just say, you have this diploma means that you've been working a lot at the university You learn how to work in teams. You prefer the future to the present. You decided to study long to get a good job later on. You know, and this is this. All these things that they ask the people, and that's quite original too.
We're talking with Bernard Girard, who is a management consultant. He's a radio host, journalist, and the author of numerous books on management. He lives in France and today is in London. He's analyzed Google's innovation since 2000 and reveals those secrets in his book, The Google Way, How One Company is Revolutionizing Management as We Know It. Brittany Deanda is our on-air producer. I'm Jim Packard, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk about the search engine Google and the strategies behind its success with Bernard Girard. And if you'd like to join the conversation, we have lines open for you at 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Nearly half of us use a search engine on a typical day. The search engine Google has become the household name in this country and around the world, and the verb Google is part of the international lexicon. Do you know, Mr. Girard, how Google got its name?
Well, yes, you know, it's a joke about a mathematical formula.
Oh, really?
Yes, really. You know, it was just you know, they were students when they started this company, and they behaved like students. And they, when you look at the company and the way they manage it, and you see a lot of things that come from the academy, including the name. You know, they didn't ask a consultant to find a name, a good name. You know, as most companies do. No, they just found a name that they thought was funny. Mm-hmm. And it happened to be a good name, and they were, you know, a bit in the book, I say they're like rebels with the cause, you know, and this is a bit like, you know, they were students, you know, and they played with the idea of having a company, and they made things. Taking as a model what they knew at the university.
Mm-hmm. Did Page and Brin succeed right away, or was there a period of time in which they, like a lot of startups, just didn't go very far?
Well, they are the problem at the beginning, you know. They didn't know how to earn their living. What are we going to sell? They decided to give the answers. You know, you ask a question, and the answers come. They're, mm-hmm. they're free, and they have to do it. As the other search engines gave the answers freely, but they had to find a way to earn a living. And as I told you earlier, they didn't want advertisements.
Right.
So they had to find a way, and they didn't find it. It was difficult. They tried to sell the engine to large companies. Well, didn't really work. You know, they tried different solutions, and then they had, because they didn't say, they had to go back to advertisement, and that was quite difficult. But as the engine really was very, very good, the venture capitalists that had them, you know, were just behind them, and so it was not so difficult as it could be, as it is in many startups.
Something that is curious to me is whether or not the investors are looking at this team or whether they're looking at their product, the search engine, when they put their money in.
Well, in Page and Brin history, there is something very, very interesting. When they wrote the algorithm, their professor, the teacher, told them at Stanford, told them, you should build a company, and you should meet one of my friends. And then they met this friend who happened to be what you know is called a business angel.
Mm-hmm.
And they stayed an afternoon with him, and at the end of the afternoon, this man gave them a check for $100,000. which was a lot of money for two students. And
I bet it was.
Yeah. And not much money when you want to build a company. And they had not yet started the company. So they took the check, they created the company, they had the check before creating the company, you know. And that is something, really, they had a very good algorithm, and the people understood that these two guys had something different, something special.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they had a good product, and they had, you know, they had something in themselves. You trust them, you could trust them, they would do something great.
Now, one of the things that is created in this company is the 20% rule when it comes to employee time. How does that work?
Well, that is a very, very interesting. So it's not, you know, an invention of Google. It existed in at 3M, you know, Minnesota, the company from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Manufacturing and mining.
Yes, which uses it in its labs, and you find that also in labs, in academic labs usually. But they decided to give that to their engineers, and it was a very, very bright idea. First, everyone talked about that. Everyone knows that Google is 20%, and all the young engineers say, "Well, what a company! I want to work there. They give me 20% of my time. That's, you know, great." First, it grew. It helped them find the best engineers. Second, it helped them keep the ideas of the engineers. When you work in a company, you have an idea, a good idea. You go to your boss and say, "Boss, I have an idea." And the boss says, "Sorry, guy, but it's not in the plan. We cannot use it." And so, what do? You forget your idea, or you leave the company and you send the idea to someone else, and the company loses the idea. And that's how a lot of companies died. And then there, Google, they can keep the ideas, and the people can work on their ideas in this 20% time. And third, there is something else. 20% of time doesn't mean you don't have less work to do. So you have to work very quickly to find this 20% time, which is about one day a week, which is a lot.
Right. You have said that Google is like an online Swiss Army knife. Now, I carry a Swiss Army knife, and it doesn't look at all like a company. So how is that possible?
Well, it's an image, you know, it's a metaphor. When you look at a Microsoft product, let's say Office, you know, and you look at it, it's a bit like a mechanical watch. If you take a piece out of Office, it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Like a mechanical watch, I don't know if you remember when we were kids, our parents gave us a mechanical watch. We opened them and then we took apart and then off, broken. And that is why Microsoft and so many software companies cannot innovate very quickly because the product are too complex. And at Google, they had the idea to, instead of having very, very complex product, they choose the metaphor of the Swiss knife, where you can add tools, take off tools, and you have, you know, only the all these tools. I don't know if you have if you see one of the Swiss knives, you can have 15 tools, 20 tools, 100 tools. You're in Geneva and you buy one. If you're rich, you can buy a knife with 150 tools. You know, and if you're poor, you can buy one for your kid.
You'd need a knapsack to carry
tools.
It around.
And you can take off. It doesn't matter. And that is exactly what they did, you know, which means that they can innovate very quickly. They can add new tools, new innovations quickly. They don't have to wait, you know, to fix everything before they introduce a new innovation. And that's why they innovate continuously. Every fortnight, you have something new at Google when you look at the product.
Yeah, something new coming out. Bernard Girard is our guest, and we have some more information about the name Google. And that's Bill in Oshkosh. Bill, what can you offer?
Well, as I recall, and I wasn't quite born then, but an old 45 record was cut on called Barney Google, and the refrain went, "Barney Google with your big, great big googly eyes." And it tends, the association would mean, clearly, to look around.
Mm-hmm.
Barney Google was a character in at least I think in the 30s, certainly the 40s, I read it in the 50s from Snuffy Smith, and Google might have had his own cartoon strip too at one point, but the whole series of characters from Hillbilly Country that were sort of poke fun at. And,
right, I recall.
Yeah, I'm not sure where the term comes from before that, but the association of looking around or searching is, you know, with kind of Eddie Cantor type eyes, I think is, you know, is might predate the math, actually, the math formula, actually.
Bernard, have you heard this before?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I am surprised. It's good information.
Yeah, we'll have to track that down and see whether or not it's true.
Exactly.
All right. Bill, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate hearing from you. And if you'd like to join the conversation, if you have something to offer on Google or on Barney Google, well, then give us a call in 800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org as we talk about the Google Way, how one company is revolutionizing management as we know it. It's published by No Starch Press. The author is Bernard Girard. It's G-I-R-A-R-D, and it's published by No Starch Press. Bernard, something that made Google stand out as well was its decision not to produce content, but to offer tools to others to help them.
Yeah. And this is in fact very important, you know, because give them the position to be neutral. They don't care about the content, and this is something very interesting because it was easy to do with the text. It was much more difficult with the video, with the movies, and there they had the problem. All the movies belong to these Hollywood companies that would let Google or others, you know, give access to their movies, and so they had to find a way to give us contents without creating contents. In fact, they bought YouTube, but the idea was that you and I, all of us, we produce contents. We put these contents on the web, and Google search engines give us access to the contents. And this is, of course, very interesting, because one company could produce, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 movies a year. Then you have thousands and thousands of movies produced every day. Mm-hmm. And the same goes with text, the same goes with, of course, sound, music, and everything. They didn't need to produce contents. We do produce contents. We are the ones who, you know, produce the contents.
Mike in Holman, let's give you a chance to get into the conversation. What can you tell us?
This was a story that was relayed to me by my math teacher when I was a junior in high school, which is about 1969. And he relayed the story as a math professor was going through numbers, and they had gone through a billion, zillion, quadrillion, the entire thing, and they were having a hard time putting the largest number there. So he asked his young toddler what was the largest number that he could think of. And his son said, Google.
And that's where it comes from?
Another story about the word Google, yes.
You have heard that story?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this was 1969, and that's literally 25, 30 years before Google ever gets started.
Before Page and Green were born.
They weren't even born.
In the late 20s now. They were not even born, you know.
Well, it's very interesting. Mike, thanks very much for adding to the conjecture here, and we'll continue to research the story of Google and its name. Jack in Kenosha has a question for you. Go ahead, Jack.
I turned in late, so I may not have heard. I want to know exactly how does Google make its money if it's worth $100 billion, and also what would be the average pay? You talked about people, you know, with graduate degrees who would work there. What do you think the average pay for these people would be?
Well, how do they make their money? They sell advertisement, they sell ads. When you look at the page of Google, you have on the right side ads. For instance, you want to go to Turkey and you want to buy an hotel room. So you say Hotel Istanbul, for instance. And then you have on the left side of the page answers. And on the right side, you have a small column with ads that give you information on hotels in Istanbul. And when you click one of these ads, Google gets the advertisers as to pay Google something. What is interesting in that is that the advertiser, which could be you and me, anyone, decides what he is going to pay and how much is going to pay for a click and how much is going to pay for a day or for a week or for a month. So you can control exactly your budget, which allows a lot of small companies who never thought of doing advertising to advertise on Google.
Mm-hmm.
They opened, you know, the advertising market. That's how they earn their living. And they have, of course, customers who buy ads all around the world. It's very easy to do. I did it. You could do it. You just go to Google and you do it with a machine. You talk to the machine. You talk to your computer. I mean, you work on your computer. You don't have any salesman who comes, you know. No, just you do it by yourself, which, of course, is for them very, very cheap. And then the second question was about the wages, I believe. Was
yes,
it?
Yes.
Yes. When they started, that is 1998, 1999, they didn't have much money. They gave quite low wages to their engineers. And they were lucky that in 2000, there was this internet bubble that exploded. So a lot of engineers, good engineers, were on the market and they lost their jobs. So they could get very good engineers at a very cheap price. As for now, at that time, as they didn't pay very well their engineers, they give them stocks, you know, options, which made a lot of them millionaires, by the way. And now they pay the same prices as the other companies in the valley, you know, in Silicon Valley. So it's nothing exceptional, you know, good salaries, good wages. But at the beginning, they didn't give very good salaries.
And there you are, Jack. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate hearing from you. If you'd like to get a question answered, you've got a couple of minutes to do it. And the number for you is 800-642-1234. And let's talk about the future. If Google is to continue its robust growth that has got it to where it is today, it'll have to contend with many problems, including competition in online advertising. Where do you see that competition coming from, if any?
Well, I thought it could come from the newspapers. It seems it won't come from them. They suffer too much now. But because I thought it could come from them because they produce contents and they can sell to the advertisers something Google cannot sell, or which would be much more difficult for Google to sell. It's the opportunity to aim at the customer in a very special way. When you, for instance, you read the New York Times, and you read it every day, you read it on the web, online, the New York Times is able to know what you read, and the New York Times can, for instance, see that you read all the papers on the obesity, because they can think that you're a bit fat and you want to fight, you know, your weight. And then they can, you don't read only that, you read only papers on Obama, on, I don't know, on politics, on economics, and they can send you ads on pills to lose weight when you read a paper on, let's say, economics. And this is very powerful. It's much more powerful to have an ad on obesity and a paper on economics if you're interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
That on the paper on obesity. So the newspapers could really fight Google on this market, I believe, because they produce content and they know they have information on what contents we're interested in.
You mentioned earlier privacy concerns and copyright concerns regarding content as well, something that they're going to have to face?
Oh, yes, they'll have to face these two things, and copyrights, and they already face that. They are very interesting products, which is called Google Books. I don't know if you know this product. It's they wanted to scan all the books, you know, all the books in the libraries.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a beautiful idea, and really it's a beautiful product, and all those who don't know it should try it. It's very, very, very good, very interesting, but a lot of books you cannot access the content because it's under copyright. And this is, you know, a big problem. What's the use to know that there is a book from such and such author with such and such title if you cannot read it?
You mentioned earlier...
Yes, and they'll have to find a solution. I don't know which one. Maybe they could ask us to pay something. I don't know, but they'll have to find a solution. Otherwise, you know, it's this copyright thing will prevent them from growing in that domain.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also had referred to cultural globalization. I think of China. You mentioned countries in Europe that perhaps think that Google is too invasive in the kinds of information that it can glean about a country.
Yes, that is another problem, this privacy. As I told you earlier, you could have governments like the USA, I don't want a U.S. company to have information on the questions my people ask, you know, my people, my army, my universities, et cetera, et cetera. And this is a problem they love to solve. They can solve it through technology, probably, and they will do it, I guess. There is another problem with the globalization. It's the fact that the algorithm they use works perfectly well for English. And English text is only a part of the world culture. If you don't read German, you don't get access to German text.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to get to read German text, you need a good translation tool, and this they don't have. They give one. You can. They have linguistic tools, but they are not very very good, and they just, you know, this is really a problem. If you don't read French, you don't get access to the French text. If you don't read Italian, and so on, so on, so on. And this is, you know, something they'll have to, frontier they'll have to cross one day or the other. That's a problem. There is another problem with language. The algorithm works perfectly well with English. It works quite well, I would say very well, with other European languages. But when you look at German, French, for instance, and you see that sometimes the algorithm is not as good as it is with English, and which is a tiny problem, almost not a problem with French or German, could be or is really a problem with Arabic or Chinese or Korean. And they have competition in these countries. In China, there is a Chinese search engine, Baidu, which is very powerful, which has a larger share of the market than them. Same in Korea, same in Japan, where Yahoo is ahead of Google,
mm-hmm.
just because they have, you know, this algorithm that are better suited to the language.
Bernard, I must close here because we've run out of time. It's been a pleasure to talk with you about the book. And continued success in the future.
Okay. Well, I was very happy to talk to you. And I hope you have sunny weather. It's beautiful sunny in London.
As I look outside, we've got sunshine here, so we share that. Thank you so much. Bernard Girard is the author of The Google Way, How One Company is Revolutionizing Management as We Know It. It's published by No Starch Press. That's nostarch.com or 800-420-7240. Coming up in just a moment, Rick Cini will be along of faircompared.com and we'll talk about airline travel here on the Ideas Net.